Good day, and welcome to the ISDA EYEFULL conference call. All participants will be in a listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Please note, this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Carl Engelen. Mr. Engelen, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you. Welcome all to this ISDA call on EYEFULL. My name is Carl Engelen. I'm a director at ISDA. The primary purpose of the call is to discuss the Uniform Settlement Agreement for EYEFULL. I will give you a quick overview of the USA logistics, and then I'll turn it over to Athanasios Dyblas from Deutsche Bank and Biss Chatterjee from Citi, who are both representatives on the Credit Steering Committee, and they will give you some of the reasons to sign up and give their business perspective on the Uniform Settlement Agreement. After that, we will open it up for a Q&A session, and for that Q&A session, we have a couple of additional speakers. We have Greg Rappaport from DTCC, David Lucking from Allen & Overy, and Robert Lee from Deutsche Bank Legal Department, and in addition to them, Mark New from ISDA's Legal Department. And so they will be available as well for any operational or legal questions that people would have. The Uniform Settlement Agreement for EYEFULL is published on the ISDA website together with a frequently asked question document. You can find the documents on the ISDA website, the credit page, under the EYEFULL credit event. Publishing a USA for EYEFULL was a decision from the Japanese Determinations Committee following the determination on December 30th that a restructuring credit event took place with respect to EYEFULL Corporation. The deadline for the USA, so the deadline to sign up to the USA, is 4 p.m. On London time on Monday, January 18th. So 4 p.m. London time coming Monday. In order to sign up, and that's also information you find in the FAQ document, you have to send the signature pages to Allen & Overy. So do not send them to ISDA. They have to be sent to the people you will find there at Allen & Overy. And as you can find in the FAQ document as well, those institutions that sign up to the USA will daily get an update of all the other parties that have signed up to the USA. So that's it with regard to the logistics. It's, as you can see, a fairly simple process. And again, all that information is available in the FAQ document. So with that, let me turn it over to Athanasios and Biss to talk a little bit through the rest of the USA process.
Okay. Thanks, Carol. This is Athanasios Dyblas from Deutsche Bank. I'm going to start and I'm going to pass it to Biss shortly. The Uniform Settlement Agreement was a process that we introduced a while ago during the first large credit events that we experienced in the United States. The idea that was a pre-Big Bang, and the idea was that we wanted to enable the market to trigger large numbers of transactions simultaneously without the need to individually trigger transactions. As you can understand, before the Big Bang, when each transaction had to be triggered individually, we faced significant operational and therefore economic risk as a result by participants that might miss the trigger deadlines, etc. And that's when we came up with the Uniform Settlement Agreement. So the USA enables participants to basically to have deemed to have triggered all their respective and covered transactions by simply signing that document, and after the expiration of the deadline, all their respective transactions will be deemed to be covered. It's a very straightforward concept. Obviously, post Big Bang, all that was covered by the Big Bang for bankruptcy failure to pay transactions, and there was no need to be doing these anymore. But here, when we're facing a restructuring event, especially an old R restructuring, not mod R event, it is relevant again to have the same process reintroduced. So I think it's a very simple concept, but with very obvious operational and risk benefits. So, Bisa, any comments from your side?
Yeah, I mean, just to highlight what Vanessa said, you know, going back to the days when you did not have either triggering throughout the market using the Big Bang or USAs, we faced the difficulty where, you know, each business or each institution would send credit event notices, because these had to be sent in writing to other banks. Typically, we would receive credit event notices from other banks and other customers and clients, and it would get very hard for us to manually keep track, and it would get very hard for the clients to manually keep track of who in the institution had received it, whether they had come in on fax, whether they came in on mail, whether they came in email, what had been triggered on what date. And so, as Thanas mentioned, the market kind of evolved and adapted this USA concept, which has been used very effectively in Europe and in the U.S. to trigger transactions. And the easiest process of just going there and signing up your institution and all the legal entities of your institution that have trades, in this case of EIFL, just helps you indicate to all your counterparties that, you know, if they sign up, then all the trades between the two legal entities are considered triggered. So as Thanas has mentioned, you know, the market found it to be very efficient from a risk management and operations perspective, and it significantly reduced the burden on the system to collect, track, and send these credit event notices.
Yeah, and I think additionally, it was a very easy thing, especially I think for the major market participants to convince each other that this was needed, because through the various credit events for which we did not have this process in place, I think almost every major bank had suffered some loss one way or the other. So it took very little convincing, as I said, to actually make it clear that this was a very needed part of the process. So, Carol, I think that's what we have for main remarks here, and then we can take it back to perhaps to Greg to make comments on the operational side, or Mark from legal.
Yeah, certainly. Mark or Greg, if you have anything to add.
I just wanted to clarify, because in the DTCC system, you have the ability to both trigger transactions, which is to actually send a legal event notice, and then actually adhere trades to the credit event, which will do the mathematics or the calculations for it. If you sign the USA, we'll reach out to you and just confirm that you want your trades adhered to the credit event process, that you'll assume that with all the parties that you've done the that have signed the USA, that you'll have bilaterally executed those credit event notices, and we will simply adhere all those trades to credit event and do the processing. So our expectation that this will ease the burden significantly, but we will reach back out to you just to confirm that you want all those trades adhered, just as an additional check.
And to add to what Greg said, just to clarify, just by adhering to and signing to the USA, all the trades, you know, be it DTCC confirmed or paper trades, both would be considered triggered.
And that's with anyone else who signs the USA, but you would still need to trigger those trades with someone who did not sign the USA, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Mark or Robert or David, anything to add?
It's Mark here. I don't have much to add from the legal perspective. I think the purpose and the operation of the agreement has been explained. From a legal perspective, you'll see if you review the agreement that it's really a very short document. And because it's a fairly simple agreement, it doesn't need to say very much. The scope of transactions covered has been greatly simplified since the introduction of the big and small bank protocols, so that now, whereas we used to have a fairly extensive list of covered transactions that matched the list of covered transactions for an auction protocol, that definition has been significantly simplified by the introduction of the small bank protocol. So now it's the inclusion of the small bang protocol in a document that marks a trade out as being covered by the USA. So that's why this is significantly shorter than some of the USA's people may have seen before the Big Bang. Otherwise, it's a very simple document and simply does the functions that people have already described.
Okay, thank you. So I think at this point we should open it up for Q&A and see what questions people have.
Yes,
sir. Operator, can you give the instructions again for the Q&A session?
Yes, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on a touch-tone phone. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble our roster. The first question we have comes from James Swinney of Artratus Fund Management. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for the call. This is very straightforward process. We have one question. We don't have thousands of trades, so this isn't as relevant, I think, as it is for the dealers. But we've actually gone through and individually triggered credit events through DTCC on all of our single-name Eiffel trades. We're kind of happy to sign up for this because I think it probably makes it easy for everybody else. What impact does that have to the extent that we've already sent the CEN through DTCC and we sign up to this USA?
Operationally, it'll actually just effectively double trigger up because we will still process the single names that you've already triggered. So, effectively, just we would end up trying to do the same trade, and it would say the trade's already been adhered. So. There's no downside to doing it, but we'll already go ahead and process based on the credit event notice you've already sent.
Operation.
Okay, thanks.
From the legal perspective, the USA actually deems any previous credit event notices that have been delivered to have been revoked and instead replaced by the credit event notice that you were deemed to deliver by signing up to the USA.
Okay, so there's really only one legal event, and that is the USA.
I think it also saves, if you could count the trades, obviously there's no difference, but let's say if you had missed a trade, this one covers your downside.
Of course. Also, I think it just makes it easier for all the dealers. They can just look at the list. Okay, thanks.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on a touch-tone phone. Again, that is star, then one. If you have any questions. The next question we have comes from Hiromi Morizumi of Citigroup Global Markets, Japan Incorporated. Please go ahead.
Yes, just to confirm, and I think you mentioned this, but if we, for example, have done trades with Counterparty X, if Counterparty X does not sign up for this, then we still have to paper trigger every trade with them.
Yes, that's true. Both counterparties have to adhere to the USA for trades between those two counterparties to be considered triggered.
Okay. Then the second question is, once the deadline is passed, 4 p.m. London time on the 18th, is there going to be a list of counterparties that have signed up for the USAA posted anywhere?
The list will be made available only to those parties that sign up, so it will not be publicly on the website.
Okay.
The next question we have comes from Shinichi Yoshiwa of Deutsche Bank.
Hi, I just have one question with regards to the definition of covered transactions. From reading the last three lines of this covered transactions, it limits the scope of to transactions which the physical settlement matrix applies or Standard Pan Corporate is specified as transaction type. Now, given this definition, my general question is, are iTrax trades, specifically the Tranche iTrax trades, are they subject to this protocol? This agreement?
It's Mark here from Mr. I can start taking that one. The The covered transaction definition, as I think I mentioned, is intended, as in previous cases, to be to the same extent as transactions that will be covered in the auction. And
yes.
I believe that the Japan DC used this wording referring to the settlement matrix because that defines the scope of standard terms that would need to be applied in a transaction for it to be covered. And
yes.
So, for example, one question we've had is, if you had a transaction that had, you know, mod R or mod R instead of old R as a standard under the matrix, would that be covered? The answer there is no, because that would be a different term from the settlement matrix. However, you don't need to incorporate the matrix itself, just terms that are the same as those in the matrix. So if your iTrax Japan trades are on the same terms as Japan corporate or standard Japan corporate transaction types, then they will be covered.
How about the calculation agent, Citi? What happens if we have London specified? Would that still be a covered transaction?
I think that there is a question mark over that, which the Japan DC is going to be covering shortly. I don't know if anyone has anything else they want to add on that one.
No, I think that's the point. The Japan DC will have to clarify those points.
Okay.
So
thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. The next question we have comes from Nikub Mohammed of the Hong Kong and Shanghai Banking Corporation Limited. Please go ahead.
Okay, let's say if we sign up the USA and our counterparty A also sign up the USA. And in this case, I would assume we do not need to trigger the trade on DTCC. And how would DTCC know which one of our trade will go through the auction protocol? Thank you.
There's two different ways we can do this. The preferred method is for us to reach out to you and say, would you like us to automatically adhere all your trades to the credit event process? Both you and your counterparty, and those will then be automatically adhered, and you will see right away which ones will be automatically processed. The other choice is if you choose not to do that, then you will need to go into the credit event process as was done several years ago and simply put them in for credit event processing. So we will not do that unless you either authorize us to automatically turn them on, which still gives you some time to turn them off between the end of the protocol and whenever the auction happens, or you'll have to do it manually yourself. And our assumption is most firms want us to automatically do it. And then if for some reason there was a trade that was not a covered transaction, you could take that off. That wouldn't be a legal notice. That would just be the indication for us to do the mathematics.
So do you mean that we need to send in a like the auto form to you?
Yes, we will actually, for anyone who signs the protocol, we will actually send out a auto form for you just to agree to, and either you will choose to do that or you'll want to manually adhere your transactions yourself, depending. The assumption will be most firms will want to just automatically have them adhered, but we will confirm with you whether you would like that or not.
Thank you.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then one on a touch-tone phone. And that is star then one. That looks like we have a question from Harami Morizumi, Citigroup Global Markets.
Hi. My question is, how about synthetic CDO, bespoke synthetic CDO? One is facing to SPV vehicle, and the other is facing to counterparty in that derivative format. Are both transactions covered in this USA agreement?
I can start taking that one. It's Mark here. There's a couple of things there, I think. First of all, if you're talking about a bespoke transaction, you need to consider whether it was in fact a covered transaction. And so you'd need to look at whether you had incorporated the July restructuring supplement into that documentation, which you know may not have been covered by the small bank protocol, so that would be a question mark you need to look at. The other point, of course, is if it's a trade with the SPV, if the SPV doesn't sign up to the USA, then trades with that SPV won't be covered. So those would be at least two steps that would need to be met there before trades with the SPV could be covered.
So that's just to clarify whether the transaction is covered or not. It's same as big bank, small bank protocol covered or not covered transaction. Is that correct?
I don't know offhand if every single transaction that would be in a covered transaction under the small bank protocol would be covered. I would suspect so. That the key test is whether the relevant transaction would have been amended by the small bank protocol to include the July restructuring supplement. Because that's a condition of being a covered transaction.
Yes, you could have certain transactions that are covered by the big bank or small bank protocol, but that would not be covered by the USA because the terms that you'd specified in your transaction did not match up with the matrix terms. Alternatively, you could have transactions that were not covered by the big bank and small bank protocol, but were done subsequently to the big bank and small bank protocol, and that incorporated the July supplement, which would be covered. So I don't think it's as simple as Mark says. As Mark correctly points out, it's not as simple as just saying whether the transaction is covered by the big bank or small bank protocol.
Sorry, another clarification. I saw the July supplement, July restructuring supplement, it's small bank protocol. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. But the small bank protocol amended transactions that existed at the point in time when the small bank protocol was entered into. You may have done new transactions since the small bank protocol was published where you incorporated the July supplement into the terms of the document, in which case those transactions would not be covered by the small bank protocol from a technical perspective. They would be the same as transactions covered by the small bank protocol, but they would not fall within the remit of transactions covered specifically by the small bank protocol, because they don't need to be covered by the small bank protocol because you've done something different, which is actually incorporate the July supplement into the terms of the transaction itself.
Sorry, I missed a point. Could you a little bit, express in a different manner? I totally miss your point. Sorry again.
So the point is that you, at the point in time where you enter into the small bank protocol, what you were doing was you were actually amending transactions that existed when you entered into the small bank protocol by incorporating the July supplement, and you also agreed that certain new transactions that you had entered in, that you were entering into after the small bank protocol was published, would be covered. But then there are separate transactions, such as new transactions done under the matrix by reference to the matrix since the small bank protocol was published, where you had simply agreed by referring to the matrix that the July supplement would be included in the transaction. So technically, from a technical perspective, those new transactions that incorporate the July supplement are not technically covered by the small bank protocol. Now, it could be that I'm just making a technical distinction here that isn't really necessary from your kind of method of determining, which transactions you think are going to be relevant transactions for purposes of the USA. But I just wanted to highlight that there could be a subset of transactions covered by the small bank protocol that would not be covered by the USA, and then there could be other transactions that are not technically covered by the small bank protocol, but that would still fall within the USA because you've incorporated the July supplement separately into those transactions.
And transactions of that type that were confirmed electronically since the July supplement
had the July supplement automatically included inside the confirmation operating procedures. Just like the big bang and small bang protocols effectively are incorporated into the new trades, but it's the supplement, not the protocol.
Hey, any further questions, Mr. Morizumi?
No, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, sir. And gentlemen, it appears that we have no further questions at this time. Would you like me to give the instructions again?
Yeah, let's give it another 30 seconds to see if people have additional questions.
Yes,
just as a reminder, as we said at the beginning of the call is recorded, so we'll make that available on the website for people that would want to listen to it or have colleagues that were not able to dial in at this point in time. Also, it's very useful to get the questions, and one of the questions obviously is still under consideration by the Japanese DC. What we will do is the FAQ document on the website, we will keep that updated, and any questions that we get in, we'll make sure that they get reflected in the FAQ document, so definitely have a look at that. And so as a last point, I want to remind again that the deadline to sign up for the USA is coming Monday, January 18th at 4 p.m. London time.
Hey. Again, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one. Hey, Mr. Engelin, it appears that we have no further questions, sir.
Okay. So at this point, I think we can finalize the call. So I would like to thank the speakers and thank all of you for attending. Okay. Thanks, all.
Hey, thank you, sir. The conference is now concluded. Again, we thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.